Everybody in the courtroom, our next case is A19-0404, City of Duluth versus Duluth Police Union, local number 807. Counsel for appellants, I assume there'll be just one person arguing?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. You'll have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, and then respondent, you'll have 15 minutes, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose. Please make sure you monitor the clock to the right when you're at the podium to make sure that you stay within your time limits. When you're ready, you can approach the podium. Please state your name for the record and the party you're representing. With that, counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Susan Hansen, and I represent the appellate, the City of Duluth. The appellate in this proceeding respectfully asks the court to reverse the district court decision and vacate the arbitration award of arbitrator Mario Bagnano, which reinstated Adam Hewitt. Enforcement of this arbitration award violates a well-defined and dominant public policy against the excessive use of force and the public policy in favor of transparency and proper police officer reporting of use of force. Now, the arbitrator's award establishes the following facts. The grievant, Adam Hewitt's employment, was terminated by the City of Duluth in June of 2017 following an incident occurring the night of May 20, 2017. That night, Adam Hewitt drug Brandon Hewell 100 feet down a local skyway by the chain of Mr. Hewell's handcuffs on his back with Mr. Hewell's hands awkwardly positioned above his back, extended upward toward his shoulders. Mr. Hewitt drug Mr. Hewell through the doorway leading to an elevator. As he did so, he did not slow down. He did not look behind him before dragging Mr. Hewell through the doorway. Mr. Hewell's head struck the door's metal frame, causing a loud banging noise. Officer Hewitt did not ask Mr. Hewell if he was okay. He did not check Mr.
Counsel,
Hewell's...
Counsel, we're familiar with the record and what occurred, and I think the Supreme Court said that, you know, we really don't need, when this analysis doesn't really focus necessarily on the conduct. So I was wondering if you could get more to the legal arguments.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
In particular, as you highlighted at the very beginning of your presentation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Your Honor. And you were correct. In order to vacate an arbitration award, the arbitration award and the enforcement of that arbitration award is what must violate dominant public policies. And in this case, in the very specific, unique facts that are before you, Your Honor, the enforcement of arbitrator Bagnano's award will, in fact, violate dominant public policies. The court's...
Is that the only basis, then, from your position, counsel, that this arbitration award can be vacated is with that public policy exception?
Yes, Your Honor. Minnesota courts, including the Minnesota Supreme Court, have unmistakably and specifically recognized the existence of that public policy legal doctrine as a doctrine that may be invoked to vacate an arbitration award. We see that recognition of that legal doctrine in the recent City of Richfield, Minnesota Supreme Court decision that was issued earlier in 2019. In that case, the Supreme Court specifically states, quote, "We have noted that a public policy exception may, in limited circumstances, provide a basis to vacate an arbitration award that violates a well-defined and dominant public policy." That same recognition was seen in the 1997 City of Minneapolis case, as well as in the 2001 City of Brooklyn Center case.
Didn't I say right in the city? You know, I've been struggling with that issue here as I've been reading your briefs, but there's a quote right in the City of Richfield case from just a couple of months ago that says, "Assuming without deciding that a public policy exception permits courts to vacate arbitration awards, the facts here do not support applying the exception." That would suggest to me that the Supreme Court told us just a couple of months ago that they haven't made the definitive decision on whether there is such an exception.
I would submit, Your Honor, that that quote, as well as a reading of the entire opinion from the Minnesota Supreme Court in the City of Richfield, makes it clear that the decision is based specifically on the facts in the case and the arbitrator's specific factual findings. We also see a quote from the City of Richfield case where the court says, quote, "The facts here do not support applying the public policy exception. It is difficult to conclude, the court says, that the arbitration award violates public policy given the finding that excessive force was not used. So that quote really opens a specific important discussion regarding how the facts in this case and the arbitrator's award in this case differs substantially and dramatically from the City of Richfield arbitration award. In the City of Richfield arbitration award, there was a finding by arbitrator Nye that excessive force was not used. That is not the case here. In the City of Duluth, arbitrator Mario Bagnano specifically found that excessive force was used. In the City of Richfield case, arbitrator Nye specifically found that the city's policy, that the Richfield policy on reporting use of force was unclear. That finding does not exist here. In the City of Duluth case, there is no finding that the policy was unclear. Rather, arbitrator Bagnano specifically found that the grievant did not comply with the reporting policies. In addition, in the City of Duluth case, arbitrator Bagnano specifically finds and comments in his conclusions of the arbitration award that arbitrator Bagnano, quote, cannot find fault with the speculation of Adam Hewitt's command staff that, quote, if reinstated, he will cross the line again and perhaps with far more damaging and serious consequences. The arbitrator goes on in his conclusions to specifically reference the fact and refer to the grievant's, quote, penchant for misusing physical force. And, Your Honor, the city's arguments in this case is that the legal precedents together establish a well-defined and dominant public policies. The city and its arguments...
I'm assuming that this is a dominant public policy. I'll assume that the transparency and reporting of use of force is a dominant, well-defined public policy, as you stated.
Okay.
I'm now going to look at this order and say, what is it about enforcement of this order would violate that public policy? I mean, I'm assuming you would not say that termination is required in the case of every violation of the
correct. Policy. We are not making that argument. Yeah. Correct.
So what is it in the award of this policy that would violate, the enforcement of this award that would violate that public policy?
The enforcement of this award violates that particular public policy regarding transparency, regarding accountability, relative to Minnesota statutes. Minnesota statutes specifically require that the city establish a use of force policy, including provisions whereby officers are obligated to notify their supervisors and complete incident reports regarding use of force. That goes to and serves the purpose of determining what is unreasonable use of force, notification to command staff.
Mm-hmm. Which I think that goes to, I'm just trying to figure out if it's not an automatic, which I think you would not argue, that termination is automatically required, why this particular enforcement of this particular award would so violate that transparency use of force dominant public policy.
Because the enforcement of this award interferes with the social contract and interferes what is recognized in Minnesota law, not only in the Minnesota statute that specifically requires a department to have a policy regarding use of force, but also in the public policy provision of PELRA. We see in the public policy provision of PELRA that the rights of public employees, the rights of unions and public employers, are superseded by the paramount right to the citizens in the state of Minnesota to their own health, safety, and welfare. When we have an arbitration award which mandates the reinstatement of an individual who has been found by that arbitrator to have engaged in excessive use of force.
Right, I was just arguing that latter one, but we can switch to the use of force now if you want. So,
I would like to explore that more, because I do want to, well, why don't we go with use of force then?
So my use of force question, granting, again, that the use of force policy is a well-defined endowment public policy, prohibiting excessive force. Your argument that enforcement of this, again, you would not argue that termination is automatically required?
We are not submitting, Your Honor, that termination is automatically required in any and all use of force incidents. That is not our position.
So your argument, it seems to me, rests on your interpretation of this award as actually making a finding of likelihood of re-offense. And you read that in the sort of the understanding that the arbitration gave to the speculation by the supervisors. And you read it also in the word pension for. And my question for you is, and I think, Union is saying that's an overreading. I mean, when I look at the arbitrator's discussion of pension, he's talking about whether, in fact, the officer will control his pension. Is there a finding in there that, in your view, that the arbitrator believes it's likely that the officer will not control his pension?
In that same paragraph, and I believe that's on page 73 of the addendum included within our brief, in that same paragraph, the arbitrator specifically finds and specifically notes that he cannot find fault with the command staff's view that if reinstated, Hewitt will cross the line again and perhaps with far more damaging and serious consequences. Now, while respondent claims correct. And while respondent claims that this is mere speculative or mere speculation on the part of the appellant, that's not what the arbitrator said. It is clear based on a reading of the award that the arbitrator gave credence and validity to the likelihood that Hewitt will engage in further use of force incidents.
I'm not sure if that's consistent with the language that you just read about what the arbitrator found, though. Because all the arbitrator is saying, I can't find fault for their speculation of what he could do. That's different than saying, I find that he is likely to engage in further use of excessive force. Those seem to be two very different things.
But we also see, Your Honor, the next sentence within that same paragraph or a few sentences later within that paragraph where the arbitrator continues to state that either the grievant takes control of his pension for misusing physical force or he will be fired. Again, the arbitrator's possessive use of the word pension assigns that pension to the grievant.
Right, but that's talking in the future. If he doesn't get his actions under control, there's a good chance that he's going to get fired later on if he once again engages in excessive force. That's not saying that he has engaged in excessive force, and I find that that his supervisors are correct, that he will do it again, so therefore I'm going to uphold his termination. That's completely contrary to what the arbitrator found.
The arbitrator did not find that the grievant supervisors were incorrect in their view that the grievant will engage in force in the future. In fact, he said he cannot find fault with that view.
Their speculation.
But he did not disagree with their view. He did not overturn that view. In fact, he made an affirmative statement indicating, I cannot find fault. That's different than what we see in the city of Richfield. The facts in the city of Duluth case more closely align with and mirror the facts of the city of Brooklyn Center case, where there is repeated conduct over time. The other piece that's important to distinguish with reference to this case is the fact that the grievant in this case had previously been disciplined and previously previously been warned and counseled regarding use of force incidents, and that prior suspension and the prior counseling and warning given to the grievant, one last warning months prior to the incident that led to his termination, is discussed in that same section of the arbitrator's decision where he talks about the fact that he cannot find fault with the supervisor's views. Yes, yes, Your Honor. The argument relates to the fact that this officer was found to have engaged in excessive use of force. This grievant was found by the arbitrator to have engaged in the excessive use of force, violation of the reporting policy, and this was a continuing violation. He had been warned previously, he had been disciplined previously, but yet he continued to engage in this. May I finish my sentence, Your Honor? But yet he continued, despite that prior discipline and despite those prior warnings, to engage in this conduct. Those facts, without those sentences on page 73 of the addendum, align with the Brooklyn Center decision. And so based on that, Your Honor, we believe, yes, we still have a situation where enforcement of this award violates a dominant public policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Counsel for respondent, you'll have 15 minutes.
May it please the court. My name is James Michaels. I'm here representing the respondent, Duluth Police Union. Your Honors, even though the briefs of both parties describe the legal issue before the court in the context of whether the award should be vacated for violating a well-defined public policy, the real core question here is who has the authority to make a final decision on the appropriate remedial action when discipline is found to be appropriate because misconduct has occurred. Before addressing that core question, I just want to cover a few key considerations. First and foremost, the central public policy at issue in this case is the policy established by the legislature in PELRA that says arbitration is supposed to be final and binding, and it is the mechanism that we use to resolve labor disputes. Further, the labor agreement between the parties not only incorporated the requirements of PELRA, but it also contained language saying that discipline can only be imposed for just cause, that discipline must be corrective and progressive, and then that disputes will be resolved by final and binding arbitration. When this case was submitted to the arbitrator, the parties jointly, including the appellant, agreed that the issues we were asking the arbitrator to decide was whether there was just cause under these sets of facts and the evidence and the testimony he was about to receive, whether there was just cause to terminate, and if not, what is the appropriate remedy. The arbitrator issued an extensive award in which he thoroughly analyzed all the witness testimony, all the evidence before him, and the arguments of the parties, which ironically are still being argued by the appellant today. And he ultimately concluded on the questions posed to him that there was no just cause for termination and that the appropriate remedy was reinstatement without back pay, which had the effect, as noted in the brief, of a 14-month suspension, a very, very strong and serious sanction against this officer for the conduct. The award thus actually reflected both what the parties had bargained for in the labor agreement, but also specifically what we asked the arbitrator to do.
Are you suggesting that under no circumstances could a court review an arbitration award under these circumstances then, that it's totally governed by the CBA, Mr. Michaels?
Your Honor, I believe, as has been noted by the court already this morning, that the Minnesota Supreme Court has not clearly said whether or not it is going to adopt the public policy exception.
Well, I'm not sure the Supreme Court has said they're not going to adopt it. I think they've just said that it hasn't been met. Those are two different issues there, aren't they?
Well, Your Honor, in the state auditor case, quote, this is from footnote 9, while we refuse to invoke a public policy exception in the present case, we express no opinion on whether we would adopt such a public policy exception on a different set of facts. And then again in the city of Richfield.
Right, but that's very common for the Supreme Court to say, you know, we're not adopting it here. We're not saying that there might not be some other facts that would, because each case has to be decided on its particular facts.
Right. Well, to Judge Flory's question, is there no case? You know, if you look at the history of how we got the public policy exception, going back to the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Grace, there the court said they likened reviewing an arbitration award to the equitable powers of the court to refuse to enforce a contract that violated the law. The Minnesota Supreme Court in State Auditor recognized that and also recognized the dissent by Justices Blackmun and Brennan in MISCO, which followed the Grace case, and queried whether the public policy exception should be limited to situations where the award itself would cause the losing party to engage in a violation of the law. So, Your Honor, the answer to your question, yes, I can conceive of a case. Let's say that an officer was found to have committed an act of domestic violence, which under the post rules can result in the loss of his post license. And let's assume that, in fact, the officer's post license was revoked. If, for some reason, an arbitrator were still to reorder the reinstatement of that officer, that clearly would violate the law, and that would be a case in which I think it would be appropriate for a court to say that violates a dominant, well-defined public policy that you cannot be a peace officer in the state of Minnesota without a post license.
That's really a different issue, though, isn't it? That would get to the 8 or 9 reasons under the Arbitration Act to vacate an award as opposed to whether or not it's being vacated for a public policy reason.
I think the public policy exception has to be narrow, and the courts have continually said that all the way from the U.S. Supreme Court down to the state appellate courts here in Minnesota. And really, the question before the court here is taking the broader reading, right? I described a situation where the award would clearly require somebody, the employer, to violate the law. If you consider it even in the broader context, which is, should there be something more than just a blatant violation of the law? Well, we have the answer already on the facts of this case. And that's Minneapolis versus Police Federation. The Court of Appeals held there is no well-defined public policy stating that an officer must be discharged if he or she uses excessive force. That couldn't be more clear. And what that means, of course, is that if there's no well-defined public policy that requires termination, that upholds, back to my core issue here, the arbitrator is free to determine the appropriate remedy for use of force. And it may well be something less than termination. And therefore, an award that establishes something less than termination doesn't violate public policy and, in fact, should be enforced. Now, logic would suggest that given Minneapolis v. Federation, that in order to prevail here, the appellant must convince the court to take a position opposite to that and essentially overrule Minneapolis v. Federation, that there is a well-defined public policy that makes termination the only applicable remedy. But appellant stated in its brief and again in argument this morning here that it's not asking the court to find such an automatic remedy of termination. Rather, it argues that
the public policy isn't, you know, Minneapolis, whether, I know the case, use the language that you're talking about, but the public policy is the policy against excessive force. And the holding is that that's not automatic in every case. But are you, you seem to be using that to say that what that case stands for is that irrespective of the that anything less than termination cannot be questioned. So even if there is just an egregious excessive force case, you know, by a multi-year repeat offender, like let's just imagine the worst possible case, and then the award is, you know, a oral warning, that's just unchallengeable then.
Your Honor, with all due respect to the courts, I do believe that is an intervention by the courts, which is not contemplated, because that analysis in your example is focused on the facts of the case. And the case law is very clear that it is supposed to be the award, not the facts, that is the focus.
Right.
And that's why...
In order to set the question up, which is you're saying that is an unreviewable question, even assuming there's a public policy.
I think that is getting to the extremes that we saw in the Brooklyn Center case. And the Brooklyn Center case is clearly an outlier. It is a case in which there were mistakes made at multiple levels, and I'm not even talking about the aberrant conduct of the grievant here, but I'm talking about, first of all, I can't understand why the union even grieved that case. I cannot understand why the arbitrator reinstated that individual to employment. Hence, I think the case is actually a textbook example of bad facts make bad law. And from that standpoint, it is clearly an outlier. But even there, I think there's a strong legal argument to be made, given what the Court of Appeals wrote in the Brooklyn Center case. Barlow has repeatedly demonstrated a willingness to engage in sexual harassment despite attempted employment termination and a criminal prosecution. He violates the law with apparent impunity and perhaps will be even more resolute in his misconduct, going on to say it's an exceptional case involving protracted outrageous behavior. I agree that it's protracted outrageous behavior. What I can't get beyond is how that result and that language from the court is still not focused on the facts rather than the award.
So you think it was wrongly decided?
I do think so. Again, what this case really is about is the arbitrator's authority. And what the appellant here is attempting to do is to ask the court to limit an arbitrator's authority and instead implement this case-by-case analysis. Well, that seems to be an absolute open door for the courts to intervene and review an arbitration decision in virtually any case that an unhappy employer can come up with a set of facts that is somehow different, unique, from a case that's been decided before. What is the standard, then, in such a world, if that were the public policy? A case-by-case analysis cannot and will not ever be well-defined or dominant because it seems to be a flexible standard. Secondly, what are these considerations on a case-by-case basis? Is it the severity of the misconduct? Well, again, that goes to the grievance conduct, not to the award itself. Are there aggravating or mitigating factors such as the grievance longevity, prior discipline, positive contributions to his agency? Again, these factors focus on interpretation of what is just cause and what is the appropriate remedy, which are solely within the arbitrator's authority. And finally, the question on the ability of the employee to correct his conduct. relative to the concerns by the employer regarding the risk of reoffense. Such an undertaking by the court would also intrude into the arbitrator's role of weighing all of the evidence. And in fact, that goes to the essence of the language of the labor agreement, of the arbitrator's interpretation of what is corrective action. Discipline is supposed to be corrective. There seems to be a disconnect in appellant's argument between a couple of words, penchant and speculation, from the result. If the arbitrator truly believed, based on the analysis of all the facts before him, that the grievance conduct could not be corrected, there is no possible explanation as to why he would have achieved the result that he did. The result itself shows that he does believe that the grievance conduct can be corrected. So in closing,
he hopes.
We all hope, but there's no guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's no guarantee that any officer, but I think it's important to note that both in the State Auditor and in Minneapolis v. Federation, the court, and in MISCO, the courts have said speculation is insufficient grounds to vacate an award. In conclusion, Your Honors, the case law, PELRA, and the labor agreement all provide for the resolution of disputes by final and binding arbitration. The arbitrator, and not a reviewing court, has the authority to interpret the labor agreement, hear the just cause and corrective discipline provisions, and then to craft an appropriate award. And most important, there is no public policy in Minnesota that requires an officer found to use excessive force be terminated. I just want to summarize, and my time is up, but it's in the court's opinion in the Supreme Court's decision in the Richfield case. The last two paragraphs decide this case as well. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant.
Your Honors, I'd like to start where counsel for the respondent left off. The last two paragraphs of the Richfield decision, as I recall, relate to also the collective bargaining agreement and the just cause provision, the first argument that we heard from respondent. The claim from respondent is that because the parties have negotiated a just cause provision in the collective bargaining agreement and because the arbitrator is granted the authority to determine whether or not discipline under the collective bargaining agreement was imposed for just cause, that there is essentially no ability for an employer, for any party, to seek to vacate an arbitration award of which the implementation is contrary to public policy. That is not the case law in Minnesota. We see from a review of many collective bargaining agreements throughout the state of Minnesota that the inclusion of a just cause provision in discipline articles is essentially ubiquitous. I personally am not familiar with a single collective bargaining agreement in the state of Minnesota that says an employee shall be disciplined for excessive use of force and shall not have the ability to grieve that discipline to arbitration. And why is that? Well, much like the case law interpreting this public policy, these are fact-dependent determinations. The inclusion of a just cause provision in the collective bargaining agreement does not negate the fact that we have public policy as set forth by the legislature, which specifically provides that the rights of the city and the union and the rights of the grievant as part of their public employment, as part of this collective bargaining agreement, are all secondary to the health and welfare and safety of the citizens of Duluth. The city has negotiated a just cause provision, yes, but the implementation of this award violates that public policy. Now, we also hear from the respondent the claim that if the court vacates an arbitration award for violating public policy, that we will have a virtual landslide of cases. The facts in the past have not supported that claim. We see since 2001, since the City of Brooklyn Center case was decided by the Court of Appeals, since that time period, by my review, only three cases have reached the appellate court level relative to vacating arbitration awards based on public policy: the City of Blaine, the City of Richfield, and now the City of Duluth. And so in that time period, we have not seen this landslide that the respondent seems to suggest. This exception is narrow. We acknowledge and agree that the public policy exception is extremely limited and narrowly defined, but the unique facts in this case, the unique facts where the arbitrator specifically found excessive use of force, failure to report use of force, where the grievant has engaged in past...
But counsel, you keep focusing on those particular facts, but ultimately we need to focus on what the arbitrator's award was and whether or not that award violates public policy, not so much particular cherry-picking particular facts from the arbitrator's decision. Because we give so much deference to the arbitrator, not only finding facts, but also its conclusions of law, which is rather unusual.
Correct, Your Honor. But an arbitrator's award, where an arbitrator has made those specific facts, but yet reinstates the officer, the implementation and enforcement of that award, reinstating such an officer, exempts the city from its duty to establish and enforce minimum standards of conduct for the officers and to protect the health, the welfare, and the citizens of the city of Duluth. We are required by Minnesota law to be transparent and accountable with respect to our dealings with the public. This award, by reinstating this officer, essentially negates the social contract that exists between the citizens of the City of Duluth and the City of Duluth Police Department. We do know from the City of Brooklyn Center decision that in that case, the court specifically notes that in addition to the conduct that the arbitrator found that Officer Burrows had engaged in, that one of the elements that the court looked at in vacating that arbitration award was the factual findings in that case that the employee is likely to continue to engage in that conduct. That's why the information in the arbitrator's statements on page 73 of the addendum are so critical. We don't have similar findings like that in the state auditor case. In fact, in the state auditor case, we have the exact opposite. In the state auditor case, the court specifically makes note of the fact that the employee's admission and acknowledgement and his testimony, as cited by the arbitrator, indicated a, quote, or eliminated the risk to the employer of future similar misconduct. We don't have an arbitration award like that here. Thank you, Your Honors. We request that you vacate the arbitration award as violating public policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. It was very well briefed and very well argued. We also appreciate the amicus briefs that have been filed by the parties as well. It's always good to hear opinions from other parties that are interested in this issue, and we take those very seriously. So we appreciate that. Thank you all. We'll be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory time frame.
Thank you.
That's our last case.